As you know, my single is dropping. It's dropping.
What's happening?
My single is called My Single is Dropping, and it's dropping.
This is Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 60 for the week of February 23rd, 2015. I am rich white investor with strong family values, David T. Cole, and I'm here with ex-wife stink eye, Sarah D. Bunting.
Shut up, Lucius.
Social security number thief, Tara Ariano.
I don't do taxes.
And boo-boo kitty, Mark Blankenship.
Ask about me.
Welcome back, everybody. We are here this week with Mark Blankenship, bun owner of the Blankenship chair. Are you the owner? Are you the dean of the Blankenship chair?
I think I'm the dean and owner.
Okay, the donor. The deaner?
The deaner.
The boner. Yes. Let's call the whole thing off. Before we get into this week's main topic, which is Empire, as ably covered by Blankenship chair beaner Mark Blankenship, just a reminder, sinner for pay guessed the phrase that doesn't pay last week, and now we have a new phrase that doesn't pay. If you think you know what it is, go to the comments on this week's show and let us know what you think it is, and you can get a mini topic in exchange.
Nope. Well done, sinner for pay.
You don't even get that. You just get to guess. You get to determine the next phrase that doesn't pay.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Although, you know, we could do that too.
But you could, you still can submit mini topics.
Let's do that too. Let's make it a double.
There you go.
You get the phrase and you get a mini.
Love it.
Whoa. Done. I was here for history.
Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. It's been far too long since I have
rested
my buns in the Blankenship chair, and I'm delighted to be back.
We're so happy to have you here to talk about Empire, my new favorite show of 2015, which is so good.
Hey.
This episode, I think, was the second that I watched with Mark, and when we got to the end, I was doing like a cookie dance in my chair because I love her so much. She is the best.
I mean, when I started watching this show, because I was going to be writing about it, mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be a bit of a diversion from my typical Extra Hot Great assignments, which tend to be all of the gay shows, RuPaul's Drag Race, Looking, and Transparent, Queer, you know, and then turns out, oh, actually, Empire might be the most gay show on television, because Cookie is, and always will be, a 21st century gay man's dream come true, mm-hmm. if you ask me. She's a drag queen, she's a drag mother, she's amazing.
Yeah.
Those nails. Oh, my God. Those nails.
All of everything. Showing up for dinner with a sable over her, like, full lingerie. Showing her ass to her entire family. Including all of her sons. She is the best.
And she's proud of it. And also, the fact that she can cure Courtney Love of her drug addiction in one heartfelt speech in the booth.
Yes.
And then immediately turned it around so that she can record an amazing comeback single. Mm-hmm. But also, while she's being driven to court to appear at a grand jury that she just heard about that second,
yep.
she can also, while juggling two phone calls, save two careers and tell Jamal what needs to be on his single. I mean, the woman can do it all.
And what I love about her, too, is that she's always right about everything.
Like, everything. If Cookie tells you that you need to drop the sound of a horse whinny on your single right here, you better mm-hmm. drop it because that's going to take it to number one.
Mm-hmm. Dave, this is not really your kind of show. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I'd watch it. You know, I was saying when we were watching the last episode is that it kind of reminds me of Boss.
Watched only by me and Dave Stars show
Stars
where Kelsey Grammer is the mayor of Chicago.
And it is very similar. It's just like this. He holds high office. Mm-hmm. He is surrounded by his family who helps him out. He has an estranged a daughter in this case. There are people who cause him problems that often disappear. There's a lot of similarities except where,
and you forgot the biggest one, which is that he has a degenerative disease.
He's hiding
from everybody.
Yeah.
Kelsey Grammer's character had one of those too.
Uh-huh. He did.
Oh my God. Yeah.
He also goes, gets experimental medicine for it. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of similarities except where, Boss was very dour and, you know, dark, and this empire is very chipper and bright and happy. They're very similar shows that just sort of have places on either end of the mood spectrum. And I kind of dug what Empire was doing. It's certainly the more accessible of the two.
Well, just like Jamal's single, Empire makes no apologies.
Well, you know, Dave, you mentioned that it doesn't seem like Dave's kind of show. And honestly, for me, I didn't think I was going to like it either. I actually just watched the pilot because we had talked about me doing the pilot and then maybe someone else would cover the show. But because typically I don't like soap opera style nighttime drama. I just don't. And I was really startled to discover that I love this show. Like, I don't even ironically love it anymore. I've just had to create a different category in my own aesthetic library that explains why this show can exist. Because it's nothing like the shows I typically like. But I have thought a lot about what it is about this show that makes it different than some of the other recent primetime soaps I watched and gave up on.
Like Nashville, probably.
I was going to ask.
Nashville and Revenge were the two that I watched for a season each. And I finally, this is what I think. Revenge has great villains, but no good heroes. And Nashville, at least when I watched it, had interesting heroes in Raina James and the Hayden, whatever her character's name was, Hayden Panettiere's Juliet. But there were no good villains. But Empire has an amazing hero in Cookie, who is not only always right, but is actually the only pure-hearted good person on the show. Well, like,
and is named Cookie. But
it also has this amazing roster of truly wicked villains. And it's not just the lying liars who lie kind of villains. Mm-hmm. It's the people who are legitimately trying to kill each other to kick a woman off the wagon. Oh.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And you have, even there, you can see that was probably Anika who was trying to call in and defend herself, but I won't accept it because
she's
hateful.
Not gonna work.
So I just think that it's like that perfect mix of the good and the evil. And then what Dave said, that it's also really fun. And sidebar, a lot of the songs are really hot. Can I get a beat dropped, please, Dave Cole?
I wish this were video. I really do.
Oh, you better believe I just danced to that.
I'll link the video in the show notes because the video is amazing.
Well, I sort of wonder, I mean, I had high hopes for Nashville, and I also gave up on Nashville and Revenge, as you did. And I feel like ABC sometimes doesn't, I think that particular network is not as well positioned to do these sort of like super over the top nighttime soaps as Fox, which tends to keep them shorter. It should have done that with Sleepy Hollow, which is not a soap, but I think that Fox being like a 10 or 13 episode type of place is better for this kind of thing. But I'm wondering if Empire isn't one of those, like, it's going to be really awesome for like 13 or 15 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're going to be at like episode 208 and be like, well, shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's what tends to happen.
First of all, sorry, Dave, to interrupt. To answer your point about a shorter season, I'm sure because this is like one of the biggest drama hits that Fox has had in years. I'm sure
the ratings are still going up week to week.
I know. Yeah, so I'm sure season two is going to be 22, if not like 26 episodes. Like, I'm sure they're going to milk it. You're probably right. Dave, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, at some point, they're going to run out of storylines about the business of, you know, the music business itself and how it relates to the company, at least ones that are plausible and not cartoonish.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the point where it'll start.
Then they got to start doing flashbacks to when the music business was a business. And
They've had some of that this season, like flashbacks to, you know, Lucius and Cookie starting out in Philadelphia and their salad days. Whatever.
But I mean,
can they have a flash sideways to Terrence Howard at the Oscars last night? Because I didn't see that shit, but I heard.
I mean, that was Lucius putting on a show for the board members in the best form.
About the Imitation Game, though? What?
I got the impression that the teleprompter skipped ahead to Selma, and then they were like, oh, crap, and they rolled it back, and he realized, oh, sorry, I'm not emotional yet. Let me.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. But I think Sarah is absolutely right. I take it as a given that a year from today, if I'm asked about this show, I will be completely over it. Because, and I don't know if this applies, but I'm assuming that this is how Scandal works too, where they just burn through every possible plot mm-hmm. until it becomes ludicrous. Yes. I don't know if you guys watch that, but I've never
yes,
seen it.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. No, so, that's another ABC that one that accurate. It was like, it was great for like 15 to 25 episodes. And then it was just like, no.
Yeah.
Like there was too much. I mean, that's Shondaland. So that's a different problem, but mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, I appreciate that this show at least established fairly early on, much as Boss did, that the degenerative disease is not going to get a miracle cure. Like they right. keep saying there is no cure. I'm definitely going to die of ALS. And like, that's definitely what happens if you have ALS. You know, the progression can be slow, but still, I wonder if it becomes a better show if they kill off Lucius. Discuss.
Well, do you think that I've wondered if Terrence Howard only signed on for a limited contract to the show and that it's like built into his contract that he does die.
Yeah, could be. That wouldn't
surprise
me.
For the sanity of the producers, if he's anything on set like he is as a romantic partner, yeah. I'm trying to kill that ass off in episode 8. Yeah. Bye.
Well, plus it's also even however it was sold to him early on, it's clear now that the show's actually happening, he's not the star. Cookie is the star.
Right. Right.
So as a movie actor, he might be like, well, I don't need to do this anymore.
And then you just create a new character and you have him played by Don Cheadle just to rub it in twice.
Ooh.
Cold. Yeah. Cold.
Yeah.
Another thing that I wonder, and I this is something that occurs to me about Nashville as well. What is it like for Timbaland, who's the music supervisor here, to basically be throwing away singles that could be huge hits? Like Drip Drop is a hot song, like, and now it's just an Empire song. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that may have happened on Nashville because who was their consultant the first?
T-Bone Burnett.
Yeah.
Right, and then he was like, because look, I downloaded a bunch of stuff that was on that show from season one, and then T-Bone Burnett is like, no,
yeah,
because yeah.
Well, I think that was partly also because he's married to Callie Thorne, and I think her role was like, or not Callie Thorne, Callie Khoury, who created it. So she was, when her role was downgraded, I think he like peaced out too, because he also didn't like how soapy it was getting. But also, like, in terms of breaking new songs on TV, I don't know if that's as big a deal as it used to be. Like, Glee has obviously been a powerhouse of like a money making machine in terms of creating singles for TV shows. So maybe Timbaland is like, yeah, I don't know. Like, how else are people listening to this? Do people even listen to the radio anymore? Like, I don't. So maybe this is the best way to get your music out now.
But I just wonder, like, will Drip Drop, for instance, get remade by someone who's actually a star? Or are they going to try to really push, I believe he goes by Yaz in the pop music world, the actor who plays Hakim, are they going to try to push him as a pop star as well? I don't know. Who knows? But I'm very interested to see how it plays out.
It would be sort of interesting if it wound up being this like Monkees/Partridge Family arrangement where like in the end it turns out to be all about the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the actors, and then the actual show is like, well, who cares? We're trying to sell tickets to a David Cassidy concert in the summertime. So
right
I mean, Nashville does that too. They have like, not Connie Britton or Hayden Panettiere, but the lesser stars do shows,
and the Glee kids used to tour too. I remember that.
Yeah, yep, totally. And all of the, like, it's every kid on the Disney Channel too. Like, I just wonder if the music business has changed so much that like there's not as much of a stigma about that as there used to be. And they're right. It's just like, we're just selling singles anyway, so who cares where they come from?
Sounds like
I think it's the only way for them to make a living, honestly. Yeah. Unless right. they're like touring constantly, or like someone has a hit T-shirt. Like, it's not like getting a record deal is like, does nothing.
Well, and as Dave was just saying too, like this sounds like it could be a plot on the show. That's sort of what the whole investor meeting ended up turning into. It's like, this is one company with 20 verticals. It's all just feeding into the same pot, but it's all different kinds of marketing.
Right. I'd like to, if I may, invite us to play a thought experiment involving Please. Empire now. Because another element of the show that I love is the strangeness and yet perfection of the guest star casting.
Hmm.
because Courtney Love is a brilliant choice to play Elle Dallas. I mean, she is Elle Dallas, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Raven Simone, I don't know, for those of you who don't read my write-ups of the episode, Raven Simone was cast as Jamal's supposed baby mama, although they were in a sham marriage that her that Lucius forced him into. And she now is saying, oh, yeah, Jamal, this is your baby, although Jamal is gay. And Raven Simone is gay in real life.
Yeah.
And so for her to be cast as a beard is so perfect on so many levels that it actually fills me with a hushed awe. And so, and I know that Jennifer Hudson is going to come up later on this season. And they also had Gladys Knight appearing as a funeral singer at one point. So I would just like us to think about which other radically crazy but somehow perfectly appropriate guest stars might we pray to see on Empire. And I haven't thought about this until just now, so I will be improvising with the rest of you. But who might we hope to see on the show?
Young MC. Oh. As a spiritual advisor, I believe he actually is a right reverend now. So
he could be a spiritual advisor who tries to convince Cookie that, like, he tries to take over her mind. You know, one of those, like, creepy spiritual advisors? Like, do what I say, Cookie, because the Lord wants you to.
Mm. And then he busts a move?
Yes.
There also has to be, like, two opposite ends of the cultural music experience come to the same conclusion, you know, like with like Yo-Yo Ma comes to guest track, you know, do a guest,
yes,
you know, track on somebody's thing. And they're both like, well, I can never, you know, get together with this guy. He's like so lame and I'm so street. But then they find they have a common core.
Mm-hmm. And, it's like when Kathleen Battle, opera star, guest vocaled on Janet Jackson's Janet album.
It's exactly like that. He says,
yes. Yes.
And there's got to be some Jacksons just sitting around.
I was
going
to say, since you said Janet Jackson, like, what has she done for me lately, literally?
Failing that, Marlon.
Yeah.
General Tito. Let's do this.
But Janet has the acting background, too. I mean, it writes itself at this point. I would also, I mean, this is perhaps a bit on the nose, but I don't care. It's my thought experiment. I would just love to see Salt and Peppa guest as like faded female rap stars who get on the who jump on and sing a song with Jamal or something. I just want Salt and Peppa on the show, coming back to glory.
Mm-hmm. Instead of on that commercial for
Geico,
maybe.
Oh,
yes,
push it real bad.
That's what they do. Yeah. I'll jump in on the guest star tip and say that I would like, here's my grand unifying theory of why Naomi Campbell's name was misspelled in the credits.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
That I was like, there is no way that it's not on purpose.
Oh my God, I hope so.
That is my theory. It was an explicit burn. I thought she was great.
How did they spell it?
Cam, like camera,
instead
Bell.
Of Camp Bell?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No P.
Huh.
As it were. Dave?
No.
Got something for us?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I will say Danny Strong, who co-created the show with Lee Daniels, has been on some pretty good TV that also went off the rails, like Gilmore Girls and Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
And Mad Men, arguably, also falls into that category. So perhaps he has learned some lessons from being on all of those shows and will know when to like pull the trigger on. Stopping
well,
it, perhaps.
To realize that we as an audience don't need to be shocked out of our minds every week, that we're not actually coming back for the latest scandalous revelation or the latest, I can't believe that he's got three hearts inside of one chest. I don't know who even knows why. Like, that we don't need that. That the long game of storytelling is more satisfying if you don't get inured to shocking twists at the end of every damn episode.
And the character work on this show, I think, is strong enough that, like, on Revenge, I think they didn't have any choice.
Right.
Given the relative talents of some of the company. Like, unless they wanted it to be the Nolan show, and I did, and do, they kind of had no choice but to just light a huge plot rocket every 2 weeks and have quadruple crosses and whatever else. I think this company is much better, and you have a much better sense of like their relationships to each other and that their history. And, you know, this is I only watched the one episode I hadn't been watching and I was immediately in it. So maybe its prospects are somewhat better. And I don't think it thinks it's a soap, which is the other thing. So I don't know.
Well, and along those lines, I don't want to give short shrift to Cookie because I feel like we've touched upon the Cookie element. But Tara, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Taraji P. Henson's acting in the show.
I think it's amazing. I hope she gets nominated for an Emmy. I think she's the anchor of the show. She's for sure over the top, but I feel like that's what that character would have to be in order to like be in that industry and survive prison and come back and like just start running shit as if she'd never left. Like this is part of, you know, her always being right. Like she can be a bombastic character who's like really shrill and it works for her, I think. What do you think?
I completely agree. And I think that she has tapped into something so fundamental about Cookie that I think the writers didn't quite... I want to believe the writers figured it out as they watched her, that she is over the top all the time, but she is so fundamentally good-hearted and good-natured. Mm-hmm. And there's always something sincere about her when she plays every scene that makes her over-the-top behavior likable, because it's not just about getting attention for herself. She really is trying to help other people.
Yeah.
And that makes me... And the way that she's able to clarify as an actress that she is interested in the fates of other people and not just herself, unlike so many other characters on the show, makes me love her and as a character, but also really respect her as a performer. And I agree, too, that she should get an Emmy nomination at the very least.
Agree.
Boom. Oh.
You caught me again. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching Season 8, Episode 6 of Face Off.
Face Off!
Can you describe the challenge for me?
Today, they had to choose a bridge. There were 6 bridges to choose from. They had to pick a bridge and make a troll that lives under it. So it was sort of like a bridge troll challenge, but they called it Troll Challenge.
And who was the winner this week?
This week, Jamie got her first win.
And what did she do?
She did Dragon Bridge.
In Bali?
In Bali.
And why did they like her makeup so much? What did it look like?
Well, it was a forest and then stones and then the bridge. She was the character was the guardian of the guards of the bridge.
Cool.
And it tried to blend in with the trees, so it was like really mossy and branchy and brown and green, and it even had a wood texture on, how do you say it?
Texture
on the face.
Cool. And who was the loser this week?
Anthony.
What did he do?
The Helix Bridge.
Helix Bridge?
Helix Bridge.
From Singapore?
From Singapore.
And what did that one look like?
I'm going to tell you the backstory to actually tell you the story. So, it fell asleep, because I don't know how to describe it. It fell asleep in the forest that Singapore used to be. And then when it woke up, it had to try to blend in with the bridge. So some rocky and some metal, because it was starting to blend in with the bridge.
I see. Which one was your favorite?
I'll have to go with Ben. It looked like a regular girl with a big belly. And a huge belly button. And then when you turn around, the face, when she turns around, the face is whole troll-like and a huge nose.
Mm-hmm. What is your name?
Livy.
What is your favorite color?
Orange.
What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
What's that?
It's a bird that has nothing on his back. How fast does he go?
Not so fast.
Why not?
Because it doesn't have anything on its back.
All right. Thanks for speaking with me, Liv.
You're welcome.
Talk to you next week.
Why didn't you add in the last question? Well, you could tell it to me after. See you next week.
Talk about Emmy nominee.
It's time for Around the Dial. We've started sending Leah questions to ask Liv, so I put that one in there, and I never get the answer I think I'm going to get.
No, but those are the troll questions from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, right. If people don't know. Obviously, Liv didn't. I'm not sure Leah knew. I wanted to talk about the Americans and how much I appreciate that there is at least one show on TV that has people on it who know how to lie. I believe on our very first I'm Not a Crackpot episode on the old podcast, somebody had written this in that as a crackpot theory about television then and movies too, but mostly TV, that it's a trope that when people are lying, it has to be super over the top terrible so that the viewer knows that they're lying. But like, the viewer almost always knows they're lying. And on The Americans, they're lying all the time because they're spies. But they're so smooth. It takes the audience's, you know, foreknowledge of what the show is about into account and makes it so much more enjoyable to watch as opposed to literally any other show. I mean, Allegiance, even like 24, anytime anyone is lying, they're like looking down, they're swallowing, they're super awkward. Like, it's just, it's refreshing.
Their nose grows,
exactly. So I just want to say thank you to The Americans for assuming that we know when the characters are not telling the truth and letting them do it the way normal people do, which is so that you can't necessarily immediately tell.
Well, first I'm going to add just a fun fact. I actually, a few weeks ago, interviewed Matthew Rhys for Backstage Magazine.
Ooh.
And he talked to me about the way that they approach lying as actors on that show.
Please tell me.
And he was talking about specifically when he's in another persona. I asked him, does he feel like he's playing Philip as Clark, or is he just playing Clark as a standalone character? And he said, no, I feel like every character on the show is basically just Philip. Because the point is, it needs to seem real. Like, you have to be able to be convincingly real for the other character in the scene and for the audience, because if it doesn't seem vaguely plausible, it will not play as in any way accurate for the way these spies would behave.
Yeah.
So it's just interestingly on point, I think, with what you just said.
Yeah. There's a scene also, I believe, in the Bletchley Circle where the main, now I forget her name, the Anna Chancellor character. No, Anna Maxwell Martin, anyway,
Susan?
The main lady, thank you, was talking about how she heard from her husband when he was trained, like, how to react if you get captured is to just, like, tell a version of the story that's as close as possible to the truth. And so I feel like that's something that we see in The Americans too. A lot of times that either Philip or Elizabeth is telling a story and it jibes almost all the way with a real thing that's happening to them.
Yeah, I'm reading a series of spy novels and they'd say that about the cover in this series, that they try to keep it as close to your actual name and background as possible so that you won't get caught thinking about your story.
Yeah.
You can just say it.
I was actually born
Outlander, not the Bletchley Circle, but anyway, Mark, you were saying.
I was born Stark Crankenship, but my spy name is Mark Blankenship. You see?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So wait, is it my turn now to go around the dial?
Yes.
So the thing I want to talk about this week is the announcement of the new Emmy eligibility rules.
Controversial.
So for those of you who don't know, a couple of very large changes have been made to the Emmy eligibility rules. For instance, there will now be 7 series that can be nominated for Outstanding Comedy and Outstanding Drama. Mm-hmm. Also, it has been declared that a show will fundamentally be assumed to be a comedy if it is 30 minutes long, and fundamentally assumed to be a drama if it is 60 minutes long, though producers are allowed to make individual arguments to have their designation changed.
Right.
Although one assumes it will be taken under stronger advisement now with these new rules in place. And the definition of what the miniseries category has been renamed to include recurring series or something that makes it harder for True Detective to pass itself off as a drama series, basically. And the idea that an anthology series is now going to be a drama series is basically off the table. And
right.
This rule has been changed so that True Detective, American Horror Story are going to be in the miniseries, recurring series category and not competing as regular dramas. Mm. And personally, I think this seems like a great idea because there was so much category fraud in the Emmys last year that it made me angry.
Yeah.
And I don't know that this will be the perfect solution, but forcing True Detective and American Horror Story to compete as the miniseries that they are, and forcing shows, and even if it means that, like, Orange is the New Black gets fewer nominations because it's in the drama category, which would be wrong, I still think it's just helpful to clarify. Oh, and the other thing, guest star versus regular cast member, they've made those rules stronger too, so that someone like Joan Cusack will no longer be eligible to run as a guest star because she's in more than 50% of the episodes of the season.
Right.
And so to me, it just seems like a smart, fair way to try to make the Emmys actually reflect the current landscape of TV and still maintain some kind of relevance, and for my purposes, make them more fun to watch, because I'm the kind of dork who gets so frustrated by what I consider to be improper rules and categorizations that I lose all enjoyment of the show. So anyway, I feel like for my cranky old man desires, these rule changes are great.
Yeah, I still feel like there's a lot of half-hour shows competing as comedies that are not comedies, like Nurse Jackie. And even Transparent is not, like, I mean, should Transparent be up against Parks and Recreation in the same category? I feel like no, personally. You know, like a drama, it can still be, a drama can still have funny parts and not be a comedy. So, like, when you talk about category fraud, like, to me, that's the biggest fraud of all. Like, when these shows that should be in, that should be hour longs or a half hour. I mean, fraud. Not to say that an episode should be padded just for the sake of it being in one category or the other. But like when even Edie Falco is going on talk shows and saying full straight on, like, I don't know why we are in with the comedies. Like, there's a bigger problem at play. But I agree that this is a good way of addressing it.
At least it'll shake it up a bit. And then the other thing that I want to point out, too, is that Variety and Sketch have now also been broken out into their own category, so that SNL, Amy Schumer's show, Key and Peele will not be competing against The Daily Show or Late Night with John Oliver, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
And weren't the awards shows all in that category as well, or do they get their own?
I think so. Huh.
Yeah. Were they specials? Where did the Tonys go?
Yeah, I think they're considered
variety shows, if I'm not mistaken.
Because I think it's really, at least they're trying to sort of acknowledge that the landscape of TV and the way that we watch it has changed. Yeah. And, like, when was the last time they changed anything really? It was to add the reality category, which was, like, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's so much change happening all at once.
That it's like, how many miniseries are there? Like, you know?
Yeah.
It's not the gather the kids around and watch George Washington starring Barry Bostwick. Yes, it's a thing that's happened. Yes, I'm obsessed with it. I don't know. I think it's a good, even if I don't agree that all the changes are functional, I think just the fact that they were made is good.
Yeah,
I agree.
Looking for something festive for the holidays? Your participating Carvel ice cream store has these beautiful ice cream cakes for the holidays. Tom the Turkey, who speaks turkey language as bad as I speak English. Priscilla and John, the lovers who never did find Plymouth Rock. And then we have Dumpy the Pumpkin. How do you like these special molded gift cakes for the holidays? At your participating Carvel ice cream store, thank you and have a happy holiday.
Oh, man.
Okay, so a few things about that. That's the Carvel ice. This, I don't know. Maybe it's a regional thing, but Carvel ice cream cakes from the 80s and into the 90s, I think. So a few things. One, I am the Carvel guy. Just losing. He's like basically doing a cold read of this. He's like Krusty the Clown coming in for his doll.
He's like, nope,
thing.
We got it. Yeah. Want to take one more take? Nope.
Some sort of turkey language thing. I'm pretty sure that he made up the name Dumpy the Pumpkin right on the spot. And they're like, we actually, that's not the name. He's like out the door. He's already in his car.
Fudgy the Whale, like the names are all terrible.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't it Mr. Carvel, like the founder of
Carvel?
Probably.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Yeah.
And what a genius. Use the same mold, just turn it 90 degrees,
yep.
Put green on it, and it's lip Bree the Leprechaun or yeah. whatever the fuck.
Well, I watched about 10 minutes of Carvel commercials to find this one. And the number of cakes that are like, yep, that's the same shape. Yep. The witch. Yep. Same as the ghost. Same as the whale. Same as everything.
That limp teardrop.
Wait, this commercial actually aired on someone's television.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was.
Oh, yeah. I probably had seen 5,000 of them by the time I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And another way the South is just a cultural backwater, because we didn't get that at all.
Well,
the one in my hometown was a drug front, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Also, Mark, you didn't need that. You had Dairy Queen.
Oh, that's right.
So the other thing that this reminded me of is last week, apparently I was saying Iowa wrong. I say it like Ottawa. Apparently it's Iowa, not like UH, not an A.
I think you're saying Ottawa wrong, too.
Ottawa.
Or if you're in a musical, it's right. Iowa. That's just for Adam Grossworth only.
apologies to all the Iowanians. You can cram it with walnuts.
Before I begin my actual segment, I'd like to apologize if you can hear pounding coming from the Brooklyn studio.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Thank you. Drip, drop.
My neighbors are apparently shooting an episode of Flip This House Off. Yeah. Talk about a drug front. Anyway, just kidding. Prank caller. Don't sue me. Listeners, March 22nd is a very important day. For that is the day. No, not just my birthday. That's the day that Intervention returns to our TV screens on A&E. Before you judge me for looking forward to watching the illnesses and depravity of others, actually, go ahead, do that first. When you're done, I'd like to say that in my defense, what I'm really hoping for is another episode that ascends the unbelievably, cluelessly, unstylishly, hatefully, whiny, shitty heights, season one, episode 3, the Gabe-isode.
Woo!
Hit it, Dave.
Can you make it happen that it's going to be paid?
Well, no.
No! I need to know this! I need to know this! Because I can't live with these things hanging over my head anymore!
But you do that to yourself. Don't you see that?
Just do what you said you would do!
But, jeez, don't you see that? That you do this to yourself?
Of course I do!
He totally doesn't. That's okay. The beauty.
Just come
I'm
out,
so
you
excited.
Will be so unhappy that you'll have to gamble your parents' money away all the time.
Oh, and his parents. Don't you see? No, he doesn't see. You went to mortgage your house. Get a grip, all of you. Can't wait.
All right, everybody. It's time for the canon. Mark Blankenship has brought us something. Take it away, Mark.
Hello, everyone. Oh, my God. Like, I just got here. Sorry. Anyway. I always love bringing episodes into the canon. And as Tara knows, I sometimes fret about it to a degree that is unhealthy, perhaps. And I always think I shouldn't repeat myself. I've got to go to new shows every time. And I have to balance out, like, what percentage of the episodes that have already been considered are from reality or comedy, blah, blah, blah. Well, finally, this time, Tara just said, boo boo, kitty, just do what you love. And I decided that I would return us, great canon judges, to Roseanne, a show that I love that has not been discussed on the canon since original iteration, Extra High Grade, when, for those of you who were around then, might recall, afforded me the opportunity to tell an embarrassing yet on-point personal story. But Roseanne, to me, continues to be a show that merits consideration as one of the greatest television shows in history, frankly, for so many reasons. And with that in mind, that's why I'm bringing us Don't Make Me Over, which comes from season 4 and is episode 24. Now, the premise of this episode, for those of you who watched the show, is the one where Darlene and Becky take Roseanne to get a makeover. And if you are like me, that's all you need to hear to give that deep body chill of painful recognition about the emotional reality of living in a family. But I'll get to that. That's just your preview. When the episode begins, though, we are given information that becomes crucial later, but at the beginning just seems to be funny. Or at least context building. We learn very quickly that Roseanne is out of work, and even if we have, so if you haven't been watching the season up to that point, which her being out of work is a huge, huge arc, you learn within the first few seconds that she's out of work and that she's stressing about that. She is disappointed to find what she thinks is a Mother's Day gift in the closet. It's a pair of terrible slippers, which look like they might be paired, if you think about it, with a robe, but that will come later. She's also stressing about her own mother, and she is about what they're going to do for her. And then she ends up getting into a fight with Dan after DJ has to get punished for not doing his schoolwork. And Dan is just like, oh, just, you know, just do whatever you want, son. Just don't do that again. And then he goes up, basically leaves. And Roseanne is left to punish DJ. And after she does so, this is what we hear.
How about if you punish him once? How about if you end up where he doesn't like you?
Give him time. He'll turn on me. He's a Connor boy. 6 or 7 years from now, we'll be slugging it out on the front lawn.
That doesn't do me any good now, does it, Dan?
Now, what's great about that to me is that that is a funny little exchange on its own, especially because in classic Roseanne style, her response to Dan is to be like, well, that's great for later. I want you to fight later, but it doesn't help me right now. That just is always a funny point of view that you get on that show. But it also just underlines that Roseanne is feeling like nothing in her life is going her way right now. She has no support. No one cares about her at all. And then she ends up getting her Mother's Day gifts, and DJ makes an ashtray, even though she doesn't smoke, but that's cute because he's a little boy. But then Dan gives her a truly terrible sub-Vegas airline stewardess robe.
My mother had this exact robe in blue.
My grandma did, maybe in that color, with a zipper up the front. Eating toast every morning. Yep.
It's like dark pink, and then there's a ribbon of light pink running down the front where the zipper is. It's horrifying. And then, Becky and Darlene, who have been plotting that they want to go out of town to see a concert by themselves with no adults, step up and give their mother this really nice gift of a day at the salon, a day of beauty. So this is what happens when they give her their present.
Here, Mom, this is from me and Darlene.
Oh, thanks. Oh, look at that. It's a gift certificate to the beauty box.
Oh, man, Mother's Day makeover. Manicure, pedicure, facial, complete hairstyling.
Man, this must have cost a lot. Which one of you is pregnant?
Still funny. Also, on a side note, you can just hear in her voice alone how much Laurie Metcalf is able to put into every single line. Like the way that her voice breaks when she says hairstyling, it's just such good acting. Anyway, so at this point, Roseanne suddenly is starting to feel a connection with her daughters, and we have had so much writing that has built us up to understanding why this connection matters, that of course she then naturally says, I want you girls to come with me. And this is their response.
Shoot, we only have enough money for you, Mom.
Oh, don't worry about it. I got plenty of money. How much did you pay for this robe?
So now the robe is becoming a running joke, but also it's just a nice, to me, very believable touch that the kids think that going to spend the day with their mother, they're like, oh my God, oh, I hadn't even, what? No, I hadn't bargained for that. Go, terrible, terrible. But then Becky, being the shrewd older sister, realizes that they can manipulate this situation. If they butter their mom up by spending time with her transactionally, they will then be able to guarantee that they get permission to go out of town to go to this concert. And then you get to the beauty parlor, and there's a lot of really funny jokes, just sort of throwaways, like when Roseanne turns around and she's been made up to look like one of the Shirelles. They say, what do you think? And she goes, I'm beautiful. I no longer have to think. And, you know, it's just in that funny way. And then Darlene says, who also has been made up to look like a 60s girl group member, says something like, wait till Dad sees you. And Roseanne goes, oh, I can do way better than him. And, you know, it's like funny. And you get the sense that they've already, you know, that they've already gone out to eat. It seems like they're having a nice day. And Roseanne, by season 4, has become a good enough actress that you can actually tell that Roseanne is joyous about what's going on. And it's a complete mood shift from where she was in the beginning. But then the girls decide it's time to lay on her the idea about going to this concert. And you can see, even before Roseanne has twigged on to what is going on, you can see the air get sucked out of her joy balloon. And this is when she, this is what happens, this is the climactic moment of the episode, after they start talking to her about it.
No, you guys are way too young to go that long without an adult.
This worked out great, didn't it?
Tell me about it.
What does that mean, worked out?
Nothing. Forget it.
Oh, this whole thing was just some scam so you could go to some stupid concert, right? Damn it.
Mom.
I'm going to pay the bill. You girls get dressed and meet me in the car.
Okay. So then, when the girls get home, Dan and DJ have been having this little B-plot where they bond as father and son, and he drives DJ around on his motorcycle because DJ has been grounded from watching TV. And so instead, they decide they're going to go do stuff out in the world. Hey, kids, the outside world, get to know it. Oh, and playing video games, too. Whatever. So they come back, and they're in a good mood, and Dan is making chili, and the ladies all come home, and Dan and DJ make a big fuss, and then Roseanne is really upset, and she just sort of walks out, and Dan figures out what has happened, and then in one of, to my mind, the all-time best scenes in the series, he goes up to confront his bratty children. And in this next clip, what you won't hear is the little exchange that Darlene and Becky have had in their bathroom, wiping off all the makeup from the makeover, where they really are just pissed about their own loss, about not being able to go to the concert. They're just thinking about themselves. And you'll hear a little bit of that picked up in this scene as well. This is when Dan confronts them.
First of all, let's just say that you going away for a weekend to a rock concert with the nearest adult 5 hours away? That was never going to happen, no matter how you sucked up.
Well, it's unanimous. I guess it about wraps it up.
I don't think so.
Okay, we'll apologize to her before she, like, explodes.
She's not going to, like, explode. She's too busy crying her eyes out. I'm the one you got to worry about. Because I'm very angry, and I don't like you very much right now.
Oh, so now we're also supposed to apologize to you.
Shut up. So I don't have to say it again in a minute. You shut up, too. Well, you guys just don't get it. You see, she thought you were actually going to do something nice for her. You know, like you cared. And that would have been the very best thing you could have done for her today. But you just ruined it.
Well, what should we do?
You're going to make it up to her.
All right, we'll think of something.
No, you had your chance. Now it's my turn.
Scary dad rage.
I know. That's exactly what my note said. Scary dad.
The shut up is so, like, I mean, people get get aggressive with each other on the show, but that's like, he means it.
He's not a small person either.
And when I was growing up, there were definitely times when I could tell that if I said one more thing to my dad, it was actually going to land me in a hospital somewhere. And there are moments, like, that's one of those moments. And you can see you can almost feel the temperature drop in the room when that happens. So then what's interesting, though, is that in saying that to his daughters, Dan has clearly figured out how he has not been paying much attention to his wife either. And so then after confronting them, he goes downstairs, and this is what he says to Roseanne, and this pretty much ends the episode.
Stop. We're going out to dinner.
No, I don't want to eat with those girls. I just want to have dinner and go to bed.
They're not coming. I'm punishing them.
Whoa.
Yes? And having to eat my chili is just the beginning. Come on, we'll decide the rest of their punishment over dinner. Let's get changed.
But they hate me, right?
No, that's the beauty part. They hate me.
Oh, Dan, that's just great.
Happy Mother's Day.
Oh, man, this is so much better than some old robe.
Okay, so right here what you get are several payoffs. The whole thing about Dan never being the bad guy has now paid off. The robe joke has paid off again. And what you learn later is that the running thing about talking to Roseanne's mother and nobody wants to see her has paid off, because the punishment that they come up with is sending the kids to spend a weekend with their grandma, which... It ties all back into, like, Roseanne saying to the girls, if you really cared about your dad and I having time alone, you'd go visit grandma. It ties into nobody likes grandma. I mean, it's just all structurally very appealing to me. And that's one of the reasons that I actually selected this episode, is because though there is no special problem of the week, this is not one of the Roseanne episodes about mental health. It's not one of the Roseanne episodes about sexuality. It's not anything in particular. There's no rip from the headlines quality to it, but it just has such an elegant craft in the way that it has been written. And I just think it's very hard, I think, to make an episode like this that flows so naturally from one scene to the next, but then when you look back on it, has been carefully built all along to give you these dramatic and comedic payoffs. And the fact that every single beat of this episode is seeded, that we understand more powerfully why she is hurt because of what happens in the first 4 minutes, that we understand more powerfully what Dan has to become to do what he does at the end because of the first 20 minutes. Like, everything connects, and there's no sense of carelessness, which is so easy in a sitcom, I feel like, because sometimes sitcoms are constructed with the idea that we just have to make you laugh, boom, 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 and there can be very little cohesion. So that's one reason that I love this episode. But another reason I love it is, again, even though there are no overt fireworks about topics, capital T, this is such a great example of what Roseanne was able to do, I think, almost exclusively in the history of the American sitcom, which is say something so perceptive and so real about the legitimate emotions that exist in families. And I really feel like it's such a rare thing to see a television show, a sitcom, deal with the moment that teenagers realize their parents are people. And I get emotional about this episode because I just remember so clearly when my own selfish ass really hurt my parents' feelings. And I remember discovering, oh, my parents have feelings. And I just think that this is such a lovely expression of that dynamic in a family. And also the fact that parents do sometimes get really angry at their children and don't like them, but it's not in that over-the-top clownish sitcom way where they get mad at them because the children are just, they're just too precocious. It's like they get mad at them because everybody's hurt. But I think that, to me, it's what the show is so good at, which is turning on a dime between humor and real pathos and then turning back to comedy. But it's all connected because... Mm-hmm. When you go back to the end and everybody's funny again and everybody's sort of, the air has cleared, it's not like the hurt is gone, but these people love each other. And so their willingness to forgive each other is embedded in their lives just as much as their ability to hurt each other. And I just think there is something so emotionally authentic about that. And I think it's connected to the delicacy and care that's taken with the writing, but I think there's also just something deeper about the show, especially in this fourth season, where the ensemble was really clicking and a lot of the executive producer turnover had stopped on the show. And they were really able to just focus on minutiae of families that are real. And I look at the landscape of contemporary family comedy, and I just don't see anything like this that has such a finely tuned ear for this type of legitimate human interaction. And so even though in a way I feel like this episode is modest in the Roseanne archives, like I thought about submitting the one where Fisher beats up Jackie and stuff like that, I think that this one really stands out as a shining example of what this show did so well week in and week out that has made it still relevant and still worth watching 30 years later, almost. And that's why I'm submitting this for the canon, because it still makes me feel things. I'm still impressed by the writing. And there's something about the show being in its sweet spot in this season that I find very gratifying.
Dave is giving me the thumb to go first. I just wanted to add, because you didn't mention it, the button on the scene over the closing credits is something else that Roseanne did really well, which is one side of a phone conversation. So it's Dan getting the call from Beverly, Roseanne's mother, to say that the girls and DJ are there, and he's giving her a bunch of instructions of what they should do now that the girls are there. Like, oh, it's great that your garden club is there. Oh, they'd love to look at your slides. You know what would be great? Darlene is going to pretend she doesn't want to, but she loves singing show tunes. So it's, you know, the punishment continues. But yeah, this is a really, really good choice. Late last week, I walked into Dave's office at some point when he was cutting your clips and saw, before we actually watched it, which episode it was, and just saw the hairstyles on Becky and Darlene in the beauty parlor and was like, oh,
just kept curling and spraying and curling and spraying.
Totally. Yeah, so this is an excellent choice for all the reasons that you said. I'm such a sucker for well done mother daughter stuff, and this really is in a very understated way. It's also I like the moment that you clipped where Roseanne overhears Darlene muttering to the other about, well, this worked out great. And like, I feel like in a sitcom today, the parent would be too dumb. Like, there's so many of the kid coms, like fucking Modern Family and even Trophy Wife a little bit, with like the kids were so cartoony, they had to have so many quirks and they were all so sassy, and the parents are always dumber than the kids, and that was never the case on Roseanne. Sometimes the kids got away with shit, but that was just because they were lucky. It wasn't really because their parents were idiots, basically. And that scene where Dan goes up and tells them some shit is devastating.
Yeah.
It's so hard to watch because it feels so truthful. And it really underscores that what the central conflict is here is that these girls are not just being like sassy sitcom girls. They're being hurtful asshole teenagers the way we all were, unfortunately. Yep. Yep. I didn't know you then, but I'm assuming you were. I certainly was. And I definitely was on the receiving end of that kind of a speech and fucking deserved it. So, it's hard to watch in parts, but it's so, so, so well done. Excellent choice, Mark. Dave.
Yeah, it's really grounded and it feels very real at points. You were saying, Mark, you know, how everybody's had this moment where they realized their parents had feelings. They weren't just, you know, in addition to being parents, they were actually human. And you have that discovery moment. And this episode reminded me of that moment, which I was probably 10 or 11. I used to play soccer when I was a kid. And there was a while where my dad was on the road teaching stuff for the Ontario Provincial Police. So it was just me and my mom. So my mom would come to the soccer games and she was like getting super into it. Like, never stop shouting stuff from the sidelines, like real cheerleader stuff. But I was embarrassed, right? Because I'm, you know, because your mom is making a scene and you're a dick. And right. I said to her after, I said, do you think you cannot do that anymore?
Oh,
you know, something along those lines. And she just, it was like shut down. It was just like, she was both Roseanne and Dan for like a week where she was really hurt, but she was like, all right, I'm not coming to any of your games anymore. That's it. You can bike yourself to the, you know, to wherever you're playing. That's it. And it was like a month like that. It was just like really awkward and cold. And I was like, oh, I really fucked up. Like even as a selfish kid, you're like, oh damn, I fucked up. Yeah. And this episode like brought all that back like immediately. And it felt as real watching them go through it as it happened to me. And that's a real testament to, as you're saying, Mark, this show that really hasn't been repeated since, which is like this very middle class, real grounding for family issues. And your last submission for Roseanne was sort of the same thing. But this one, you know, really hit home for me for that reason. And I don't think my experience is unique. I think everybody has that story, that moment. And that they managed to do all that in a episode that still had good laughs is commendable. I just want to finish by saying, bite me. Okay.
Why didn't you think of that years ago? It was sort of like the first 2/3 of the episode. It was like, well, you know, this is good, pretty standard, funny. And like, I think my favorite laugh line was when DJ's like saying he wants to leave the motorcycle helmet on so he can bang his head against stuff. And Dan's like, this is a $200 helmet, so you go ahead, but take the helmet off first. So funny. But yeah, like we all got our mom so mad, and especially like for daughters, this was like particularly severe at that age when your mom is too mad or hurt to talk to you herself. And she has to send your dad, who in my case had no sisters and was like completely at sea with some of the gusts of estrogen that would buffet the rest of the household. My mom would be like, you got to go talk to her. He's like, she didn't do anything to me. And my mom's like, go talk to her. By which she meant kill her. But yeah, the emotional truths in this episode were, you know, they're right there. And this is what this show really does best. Like, I think this episode really exemplifies that ability of Roseanne to like turn off the funny and like get at the heart of it, but not in this like cheesy, unearned, no laugh tracky way that's like 98% of the rest of TV. Like, these are people you know, these are people you are or have been. And like their ability to sort of like go back to being funny shortly after that is another thing that I appreciate about the show, that it's not like whatever the Family Ties episodes where
Alex takes speed or whatever.
Yeah, or like he's talking to his therapist about something or other, and it's like a bottle episode of a sitcom. Great idea. They just do this really well. The tonal control is really impressive. And yeah, I think that's like its secret weapon as a show, because it can be hilarious, but it also gets at these truths about family, like you said.
Well, and you can hear it in the clip that we played where she says, oh, so this was all just a big scam, like that you could hear a pin drop in that studio. Like, no one's snickering. There's nothing funny about it. Like, the audience is obviously totally in the palm of their hand watching this and like probably wishing that the floor would swallow them up, because it's so, so true and so painful.
I just want to say the bite me line was a joke in the show, in case people don't remember. everybody's ending calls to Beverly with a kind of a muttered bite me. Yeah. So yeah. All right. So voting time.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yes.
Tara.
Yes.
Yes.
Woohoo!
Roseanne, season 4, episode 24. Don't make me over. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody, it's time for winner and a loser of the week. Sarah has our winner.
Both winner and loser come from the halls of academe this week. My winner is Professor Utonium, because the Powerpuff Girls are getting a reboot in 2016. I don't like having to wait a whole year, but it's actually not a whole year. Yay!
Yay!
Is it the same people that did that special last year? Because that stunk.
I think it's the original team, but I'm not sure of that.
Well, good if that's the case. If it's the people that did the last year ones, temper your expectations, because it felt really off for Powerpuff Girls, I thought. Tara?
I have the Nutty Professor here. I can't remember why, because my real one was... yes, now I remember. Sorry.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, time for another Tara update.
Okay. Eddie Murphy was part of last week's SNL 40 celebration in a very weird segment where it was sort of like Chris Rock introduced this tribute to him, and then they had a whole bunch of clips, and then he came out and was like, hi, and that was kind of it. apparently, there was supposed to be a moment where he was going to do a Bill Cosby bit, and then at the last minute didn't. And so somehow this came out, and Dr. Cosby was asked about it and said he was very grateful to Eddie Murphy for not doing that. And so I have to imagine Eddie Murphy was, wishing that he hadn't been thanked by Bill Cosby, because that's not something anyone really wants right
now.
Yeah. Exactly. Why I put the Nutty Professor in here, I'm sure I don't recall. Someone's having a fugue state. Let's move on.
That's bullshit.
Yep.
All right, guys. You know what time it is?
Time to get calculators?
Yeah, it actually is, because it's game time.
Whoa!
All right. This is the eighth game time of the season. Standings are valued guests, 3 points. Tara, 3 points. Sarah, 2 points. Close season.
Very close.
Today we are playing Mountain Climber from Mr. Joe Reed. As is the case with all Swiss Alp themed games, Mountain Climber is a game of trying to guess as close to the correct amount as possible. All right?
Okay.
So close, you're going to be estimating things. Closest is what you want to go for. Okay. You will be asked questions about TV shows and actors where the answer is a number. You accumulate points based on how far away your answer is from the correct answer.
Aha.
Lowest score wins then. So points are bad. Points are bad, guys.
Okay.
On the nose, bullseye answers will allow you to remove 10 points from your total.
Whoa.
All right.
Ooh.
The questions are grouped into four types, so they have been spaced out carefully so that big numbers and small numbers even out so nobody is at a competitive disadvantage. All right?
Very thoughtful, Joe.
Thanks. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So Mark and then Sarah and then Tara.
Okay.
Are we ready to play Mountain Climber? Have your calculators ready. Everybody has to keep their own scores. Okay, here.
Okay.
Yes.
Go. Mark Blankenship.
Yes.
Round one, guest stars. Guess how many episodes the actor or actress appeared in the TV show.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Wayne Knight as Newman on Seinfeld.
I will guess 75.
The answer is 45. So you just got 30 points, my friend, and that's how it works. Sarah.
Yes.
Paul Schultz as Father Phil on The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
How many episodes did he appear in?
12.
Wow. I'm gonna give a sort of Dave Cole estimates on buzzes and 13.
Holy shit.
13, one away from a bullseye answer.
Damn.
You got 1 point. Tara.
Yes, sir.
Maggie Wheeler as Janice on Friends.
10.
19.
Oh,
19.
Boy.
All right, back to Mark. Willie Garson as Stanford on Sex and the City.
Okay. 40.
27.
Damn
27.
It.
27.
So Sarah. 13 points for me.
Yes.
J.K. Simmons as Skoda on Law & Order Original Ray's Mothership.
That's, Mothership.
Yeah.
Shit.
Mothership.
Mothership. 32.
46.
That's really close, though.
46. Allison Brie as Trudy Campbell on Mad Men. For Tara.
For me?
No, for me.
No, Tara.
For me. On Mad Men.
Yes, that's Trudy Campbell.
Trudy Campbell. 30.
Pretty good, 35.
Okay.
Ooh.
All right. Bebe Neuwirth for Mark as Dr. Lilith Sternan on Frasier. On Frasier.
On Frasier?
Yeah, how many episodes was she on Frasier?
8.
12.
Nice.
12.
Nice.
All right, to Sarah.
Yep.
Richard Lewis as Richard Lewis on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Christ.
Richard Lewis as himself on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I have no idea. 22.
27.
Fuck
oh, my
me.
God.
This is really your game, Sarah.
Thanks for jinxing it, Tara.
Sorry. That's not my intention.
Yes.
Rally cap.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Dean Winters as Dennis Duffy on 30 Rock.
9.
15. 15 episodes.
Okay.
Richard Jenkins as Nathaniel Fisher on 6 Feet Under for Mark.
15.
21.
I'll
21. That's more than I would have thought for a dead guy.
Yeah.
Sandra Bernhard as Nancy on Roseanne. For
Sarah. Well.
I have no damn idea, so I'm going to say 12.
33.
Oh, shit. Oh. Tara.
Sorry. Really was not my intention.
All right, Tara. Lena Olin as Irina Derevko.
Irina Derevko?
Derevko? Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Laugh it up, fuzzball. On Alias.
Twenty-seven.
All right, Mark.
Yeah.
Catherine Cannon as Felice Martin on Beverly Hills 90210.
A show I've never seen.
Uh-oh.
Get out.
That's your mistake.
Shh, they'll turn on you, Mark.
Elise.
You love Beverly Hills 90210.
Sarah, put that down. I love it. I mean, I love it. Luke Perry's the best.
It's Felice, you infidel.
I will say 21.
40. You just racked up 18 points. All right. Sarah, Leslie Jordan as Beverly Leslie on Will and Grace.
No idea. 22.
Half that number. 11. 11. All right. Sharon Angela as Rosalie Aprile?
Aprile.
I don't know when everybody started laughing at everything I got right. You're supposed to be sad for me.
I'm
not
sorry.
Laughing. Oh, Dave,
it's very sad.
Go back to Iowa, Dave.
It is very sad.
You and your turkey
Iowa.
Language.
Rosalie Aprile.
Yeah.
20.
37.
Okay.
Wow, what? Really?
Yeah.
Good job,
she
bro.
She must have been in the back of a lot of episodes of Vesuvius.
Mark.
Yeah.
Joe Mantegna.
That's very sad. That's what I meant to say.
As Fat Tony on The Simpsons.
Joe Montenegro. As,
yeah.
I will say...
Who's that guy who does the that song? He's the trumpeter or whatever.
What? I don't know. That's Kenny G.
No, that's Kenny G. I'm thinking of somebody else. There's some other guy. Never mind. Let's go. Continue.
Fat Tony. Fat I will Tony. Say 25.
Oh, I don't even know where I am anymore. Ooh, 27.
Wow.
Yes, queen.
Girl.
Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Diane Cannon as Judge Jennifer Whipper-Cohn on Ally McBeal. This is for Sarah.
12.
18.
Nice.
I'll take it.
Liza Minnelli as Lucille 2 on Arrested Development.
14.
21.
Dang.
Really?
Back to Mark.
Yes.
That's your last question of this round. Ken Marino as Vinny Van Lowe on Veronica Mars. How many episodes?
Another show I've never watched.
Uh-oh.
16.
10.
Oh, great. Okay.
Right on the cusp of a ding, I would say.
That's the name of my sex tape.
Yep.
No, great. Great, Dave.
William B. Davis as the cigarette-smoking man on The X-Files for Sarah.
Oh, gosh. 31.
38.
Whoa, that's close.
That's pretty good, though. All right, last one before our score break. For Tara.
Yep.
Wanda Sykes as Wanda Sykes on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, God. 30.
Whoa. 9.
Really?
Ooh. You got a lot of points
Dang,
there, Missy.
I did.
Ouch.
All right, mountain climber. Let's see what everybody's points are. Tara.
I have 74 points after that last one. Damn it.
Mark.
I have 80 points.
Sarah?
I have, hold on. 41, 52, 58, 65 points.
Oh,
nice.
Buzzy.
All right. It's a pretty close game then.
Now, let me, before we go on, do we keep the same points now? We don't erase and start over for round two?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay.
Round two, Emmy nominations.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
Joe's
revenge.
I'm with you. I feel you through the radio, Joe. Or the podcast, you know what I've said.
Total nominations. So total nominations among the four actresses on and for the Golden Girls.
Whoa.
Mark.
Is this for me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, wait. Hold on. 8 seasons. I'm going to say 26.
Ooh, you should have stopped at 20. 20. But that's pretty close.
Yeah, I still got a ding. I still got a ding.
That's Sarah, what she said. Yep.
Total nominations for writing for The Sopranos.
Oh.
Whoa.
Total nominations for writing for The Sopranos.
Because you know there were years where they were probably more than one episode nominated.
Was that helpful, or like, is Tara trying to throw you?
I'm not!
Who's Tara? Yeah. Total nominations for writing. 11.
12.
Damn!
Oh, girl. Nice.
Total nominations for writing for Mad Men. Tara.
Oh.
To date.
Well, if Sopranos was only 12, I'm going to say Mad Men was also only 12.
8.
Okay.
I wish you could have seen Sarah's hand gestures to indicate how many writing nominations she thinks Mad Men deserves.
I can use my imagination.
Total nominations for directing for ER. For Mark, ER, that stands for emergency room, Mark.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Bear in mind, it was on for 700 seasons.
Yes.
It is still on somewhere.
I'm going to say 10.
Pretty good. 13.
All right.
Total nominations for writing for Cheers to Sarah.
That was in a bar.
Yes. Cheers.
For writing.
In Boston.
So I'm going to say 11 again.
9.
Nice.
Total nominations for directing for Curb Your Enthusiasm to Tara.
Oh, 7.
That's our first bullseye.
What?
Oh!
Negative 10, Tara. Negative 10.
Sweet.
Jack of diamonds. All right, back
to Mark.
Sarah and I are now tied, by the way.
Excellent. Total best comedy series nominations for MASH. Now, MASH, Mark, stands for Mashed Apricots. Seeming
Sleepy
heavy.
Hollow.
It's MASH. Total comedy series nominations for MASH. Which was also on for a ER number of years.
I'm going to say 8.
11.
Right. Wow, nice.
Thank you.
All right. Wow, man, Picky is really doing a good job here with laying out stuff for everybody. Total for Sarah. Total performers nominated for guest actor, actress on the entire Law & Order franchise.
The entire Law & Order franchise, that's all of them.
Yes, guest actor noms, Emmy noms for all Law & Order Azizis.
Including trial by jury.
Yes.
And but not conviction.
Law & Order in the early years, and it was like Muppet Babies, and it was all like animated.
38.
18.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh.
All right, Tara.
Burr.
Total performers nominated for guest actor or actress on Will and Grace.
Oh, God.
There's a show that loved its guest star.
Yeah, it really did. 22.
11.
Shit.
All right, Mark.
That's
you
bullshit.
Ready?
Yes.
Total Best Reality Competition Series nominations for The Amazing Race.
Okay, okay.
You got this.
I'm going to guess 12.
Bullseye.
Yes!
I knew it. Good for you.
So that's negative 10 off
for
your
good
score,
juju.
Mark.
Minus 10.
This game is very competitive right now, you guys.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
Total nominations for Best Reality Competition Host for Ryan Seacrest. How many nominations?
11.
6. 6. Total number of times Ed Asner was nominated for playing Lou Grant across all TV shows, Tara.
Right.
That includes his guest appearance on Law & Order early years.
I'm going to say 9?
10.
Yes!
Wow, oh, nice.
All right, back to Mr. Blankenship. Sitting, keeping that Blankenship chair warm, here's your last question of this round. total number of times Kelsey Grammer was nominated for playing Fraser Crane across all TV shows?
Yep. Okay. No, see, okay. That's real cute, though, and I like it. I'm going to say 13.
Bullseye.
No!
Hey! Come back.
My wasted life finally proves valuable.
All right, Sarah. Total yep. number of actresses who were nominated in any acting category for Desperate Housewives across all seasons.
Oh, boy.
Any category across all seasons.
Yeah, any acting category.
Acting
so supporting,
category.
You know,
guest,
plus
I guess.
Main and guest. And, yeah. And, yeah.
Four.
Ten.
Really?
Yeah.
Piece of shit show.
All right, here's our last question for this round.
Yep.
For Tara, total number of nominations for Stephen Bochco for Best Writing for a Drama. Remember when the world loved Stephen Bochco?
Yes, I do. Stephen Bochco.
Writing all those storylines for
Law and Order of the early years.
Law and Order guy. He's the Law and Order guy. Can't remember. Larry? No. What's his name?
What?
Jerry Orbach?
No.
Dick Wolf.
Dick Wolf?
Dick Wolf.
Ellie Law is what Briscoe. I meant
to say. Oh, God. Harry Hamlin.
No.
Jimmy Smith?
No, Dr. Giggles.
Oh, Larry Drake.
What's his name on the show?
Bernie.
No.
Benny.
Benny.
Quit stalling and answer the question,
this is
Tara.
Quite the cul-de-sac. All nominations for Stephen Bochco for writing. I'm going to say 15?
19.
Nice. Great.
All right, let's get them scores. What do you have, Tara?
I have 84.
Sarah?
I have 99, like
and
tears.
Mark?
72.
Ooh, things are shifting a bit. All right. Round
three. I would
like
to register my surprise that Joe did not include total number of nominations for Time Daily in that round.
We're not done.
Over yet.
Yeah, game's not done. Round three, opening credits cast members.
Oh,
answer
shit.
With the total number of performers who appeared in the opening credits of these shows.
Okay.
All right. So, Mark, 30 Rock.
Okay. Okay.
He's thinking. I can hear the fingers on his hands going up and down.
Six.
Seven. Yeah.
Oh, I rushed and forgot somebody.
Pete. Probably Pete.
Rock. Always Pete. Sarah.
Yeah.
Alias.
Oh, I forgot Judah Friedlander. Anyway.
What?
Alias.
Six.
16.
Really?
Yep.
What?
Across all seasons, you know, the
Across all seasons. All right.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Ooh. Beverly Hills 90210, Tara.
Oh, no. Across all 7,000 seasons?
Yep.
Christ. I'm going to say 43.
Whoa, way off. 21.
Oh, great.
Wow.
21. All right, back to Mark. Cheers.
Vengeful ghost of Vanessa Marcel.
Yes.
Cheers. It takes place in a bar.
Cheers. Yeah. I didn't hear. Okay. It's probably not considered kosher to write it all out, right? Like, I just need to answer?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's probably right.
I'm going to say 11.
10.
Whoa.
Nice.
All right. Law, L.A. Law. L.A. Law for Sarah.
L.A. Law. Oh, God.
Remember, Corbin Burnson's penis did not get its own credit.
14.
23. West Wing.
Oh.
West Wing.
West Wing.
16.
Ooh, 15.
Ah!
Nice.
All right, back to Mark with Emergency Room. Also known as ER. Also known as
Oh, God. 25.
Oh, 26.
Whoa.
Really? Is that low? Good job, by the way.
Angel. Angel, Sarah.
On hell. Eight.
11.
I'll take it.
All right. Everwood, Tara. Everwood.
12.
10. Nicely done. All right. Last question for everybody in this one. These are good ones. For Mark, The Real World.
Sarah knows it exactly.
These questions are difference makers. These are potential difference makers.
Okay.
Don't start counting.
Don't ask Sarah how many seasons there have
been. I'm going
to
guess. Wait, no, hold on.
Mm-hmm. The Real World had a ER number of seasons.
155.
155?
Yes.
Try 231.
Oh, shit.
All right. Sarah.
Yep.
Saturday Night Live.
God damn it.
40 seasons, but the turnover is really weird on that show.
It's true.
Chris Parnell would count as one, even though he left and came back.
Mm-hmm. 222.
141.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And
What did you say?
141.
Is what she said.
No, that's the answer.
Oh.
That's what she said.
Okay.
Top Chef, Tara.
Zing.
Ooh. Fuck.
96.
Try 193.
Oh, shit.
Wow. All right. That was
Bye,
a big one.
Girl.
No. All right. That was round three. One more round left. Let's get the scores, Tara.
216.
Sarah.
202.
Oh, and Mark.
151.
Nice. Oh.
Let's get him.
All right. Round four. Important milestones. Answer. How many episodes into the series the event in question took place?
Okay.
Oh, God.
Joe, we're in a fight.
Who's right, Joe? Mark. The one who's dead to me? That Joe?
How many episodes into Buffy the Vampire Slayer did Buffy and Angel first have sex?
Sarah knows this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Another show I never watched. I'm going to say 50.
How many?
50.
Half that, 25.
Okay.
All right. For Sarah, how many episodes into Battlestar Galactica was the final Cylon revealed?
What?
Yep.
Fucking fuck. Fuckity fuck, fuck, fuck. So 40.
64. All right, Tara. How many episodes into The West Wing did we first find out President Bartlett had MS?
32.
12.
Oh, God.
12. First season, really? By the sounds of Shit. It, guys. All right. Mark?
Yes.
How many episodes into The Simpsons did Sideshow Bob first appear?
Sideshow Bob?
Yep.
I'm going to say 11.
12.
Ah! Right. Oh, my God. Joe.
For Sarah, how many episodes into Cheers did Shelley Long's Diane leave the show? Do you know
70.
121 episodes.
Whoa, what? I never would have guessed that. Holy
Homegirl
shit.
Was on for that long?
Bye, y'all.
Unless the first two seasons had 121 episodes, then maybe.
This is me just literally sailing off a cliff right here. Fuck.
All right, Tara. How many episodes into Melrose Place did Kimberly first take off her wig and reveal a hideous scar?
Like 37?
Like 60.
Shit.
All right, Mark.
Could have been worse.
Yeah.
It's your second to last question of the game.
Penultimate, y'all.
How many episodes into Law and Order Special Victims Unit did Ice-T join the cast? Ice-T.
I think it was 25.
He's very refreshing.
Yes. That was for 25. You, Laura Alexander.
25.
45?
20. 25.
25, he said.
23.
Yes.
Oh, Christ.
All right. how many episodes into ER was the famous Love Labor's Lost episode?
Oh, God.
19.
Try 18. So close.
Nice. I'll take it.
All right. Last questions, everybody.
Yep.
For Mark.
Oh, no, it's me. I haven't had my second last question yet.
Oh. All right. Just looking at the numbers here. Seems like I missed one again. All right, we'll figure it out. Tara.
Will we?
How many episodes into Roseanne did the Connors win the lottery?
Oh. 151.
200 even.
What?
200 even.
I thought Tara had it dead on.
All right, Mark.
Yes.
How many episodes into Twin Peaks did we find out who killed Laura Palmer?
Is this a trick question? I thought we found out in the movie Fire Walk With Me. Okay, fine.
It's all right.
Don't look at me.
I'm just a coyote. I cannot provide that information.
I will say, with under duress, I will say 25.
25?
Yeah.
17.
Okay.
17. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
How many episodes into Friends did Monica and Chandler sleep together in England?
104.
That's pretty close. 96.
Yeah.
Very close.
96. Under the Cirques, I will take it.
And you guys vamp for a bit while I see if I actually missed a question.
I'm just drip, adding up, drop, doing a little math.
Drip, a drip, a drip, drop. Tara do her dance like drip.
You don't stop.
I don't think there's any way that anyone other than Mark would do.
I agree. So I am going to give you the shits and giggles tiebreaker as your last question.
Yeah, we don't need a tiebreaker.
All right. How many episodes into Dawson's Creek did Dawson make his famous cry face?
Is this for Mark? Is this my question?
No, it's for Tara.
You're done, Mark.
60.
Oh, good guess. 58. All right, that's game, Tara.
Well, I came in dead last with 310 points.
Sarah?
286, and not proud of it.
And Mark Blankenship?
187.
What?
Oh, he murdered this game, y'all. We'll start
with valued guests. Whoops.
Valued guests.
Congratulations. Woo! That puts valued guests in the lead.
No kidding.
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We dropped our discussion of the hit hop. Pause for laughs. Soap opera empire. Liv reported on the latest episode of Face Off, and we went around the dial with stops at The Americans, The Emmys, Carvel, and Intervention. Mark successfully pitched us Roseanne's Don't Make Me Over for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Mark, playing for value guests, climbed to the top of the mountain to win this week's Game Time.
Yeah, boy.
Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Wanda Sykes, why you screw me like that?
Sarah D. Bunting.
Your mom's an old robe.
And Mark Blankenship.
Boo Boo Kitty can scratch.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
The other reason, though, that I do have to choose this episode.
Here we go.
I want you to take it back.
Oh, God.
I was in the eighth grade when this episode aired. Uh-huh. I was 14. And the day before this episode aired, I was enjoying myself as a young man in my bedroom, and the door to my bedroom was closed. But at this point in my family's life, that didn't really mean much. So my dad came upstairs to say goodnight. And typically, I was able to have private time with one ear open, as it were. But this particular night, I didn't hear him coming up the stairs. And he opened the door in the midst of basically being like, I love you, son. Good. And then he, oh my God, I'm turning red to think about it. So then he went downstairs
And I was really awkward. I completed my business, of course, but that's not here nor there.
That is dedication.
And then that's about 15
minutes. Be right with you, Dad.
And then about 15 minutes later, I walked downstairs. I'll never forget, because you could, the stairs that you walked down, you only had to walk down halfway to see whoever was in the living room.
God.
So I walked about halfway down and I was like, Dad, just so you know, I don't do that a lot. Like, that was going to make
God,
it better.
That is way more forthright than anybody I know would ever have been.
Just so you know, I don't do that a lot, because I was sure he was ashamed of me. It was a lie, because I was really trying to set some sort of record at this point in the eighth grade. I mean, I swear to God. I mean, I don't know how I got my homework done at this point in my life, but I was like, that's... And he was like, it's okay, it's okay. And I think it was one of those things where the rattlesnake is more afraid of you than you are of it. Rattlesnake.
Is it poor choices.
But anyway, I went upstairs, whatever.
So is Blankenship at this point.
The very next night, the goddamn masturbation episode of Roseanne debuts on TV. And we're watching it. And my dad and I are the only ones in the den watching it. I don't know where my mom was, but I was just like, oh, Jesus, this is what this episode is about.
And it's like, light, damn, lighter. Just like, I'm myself on fire right now.
And at the point where Dan goes, you know, everybody does it, my dad took a beat and went, right, Mark?
No!
And I don't even... It was really one of those moments where, you know, like when they talk about you're having a panic reaction and like the sides of your vision become white. That is pretty much what happened to me. And even the sense memory of it now, I feel like that my blood pressure just spiked.
You woke up 3 weeks later.
Yeah, I know. But my dad just took such relish in it. So anyway, that story has also made this particular episode very near and dear to my heart, as it did speak quite...
And parts beyond.
Yes.